Welcome to the CSIS Cogitasia podcast, where we think deeply and reflect on policy in Asia. I'm Colm Quinn. We'll start as we always do with the region's news. In Seoul, the dates for annual military exercises between US and Korean forces were announced. The large exercises, called Key Resolve and Full Eagle, will be held from March 3rd to April 24th. While these war games are a test of defensive readiness for the Republic of Korea and American units based there, North Korean provocations are expected to increase during this period. In China, President Xi Jinping unveiled his personal political theory, which state media distilled into four slogans, known as the Four Comprehensives. The slogans translate as a mandate to comprehensively build a moderately prosperous society, deepen reform, govern the nation according to law, and strictly govern the party. Numbered slogans have been a mainstay of the Chinese Communist Party since the 1950s. It remains to be seen how this set will impact China's governance, but they do fit Xi's ongoing campaign to root out corruption. The budget session of India's parliament began on Monday, and in the country's business community, attention is focused on the finance minister's annual budget speech. Finance Minister Arun Jaitley will announce the nation's budget for the coming year in the speech delivered on Saturday, February 28th. In Tokyo, Japan's parliament was thrown into confusion after the resignation of Farm Minister Koya Nishikawa over a donation scandal. Lawmakers and opposition parties boycotted a regular Q&A session on the budget and demanded Prime Minister Shinzo Abe attend a rescheduled Diet session to discuss Nishikawa's resignation, which Abe and his full cabinet did the following day. Clashes between the government of Myanmar's military and ethnic Chinese rebels, called the Myanmar National Democratic Alliance Army, continued this week in northern Shan State. Dozens of soldiers on both sides have been killed in the fighting that began on February 9th. And that's the news. Building on the story we covered in Myanmar, this week's leaderboard profiles Peng Jiasheng. Peng Jiasheng, also called Pon Cha Shin, is the leader of the Myanmar National Democratic Alliance Army, or MNDAA, a Kokang insurgent group in northern Shan State made up of ethnically Han Chinese. Peng began serving as a commander in the Kokang People's Liberation Army in 1968, which then merged with the Communist Party of Burma. Peng established the MNDAA in 1989 amid the breakup of the Communist Party. Myanmar's junta allowed Peng to rule the Kokang region for 2 decades, during which he reportedly engaged in massive drug trafficking. But after he fell out of favour with the government, the military invaded Kokang in 2009 and Peng was forced to flee, allegedly to neighbouring Hua State or to China. On February 9th, Peng's MNDAA launched a well-coordinated assault on Myanmar's government forces stationed in Kokang, reportedly with the assistance of allied ethnic armed groups. President Thein Sein has declared a state of emergency for 90 days in the region and gave the military enhanced executive and judicial powers to deal with the crisis. Scores of casualties have been reported and tens of thousands of civilians have fled the fighting, many crossing the border into China as refugees. The 83-year-old Peng seems determined to retake as much ground as he can from the Myanmar military, while hoping that China might intervene to broker an end to the fighting. He has already appealed to fellow Chinese for support, though he denied reports from the Myanmar military that his insurgency is being supported by Chinese mercenaries. The fighting threatens to strain diplomatic ties between China and Myanmar, and also threatens the future of the Myanmar government's sputtering attempts to reach a nationwide ceasefire with ethnic armed groups. Now we turn our attention to Taiwan and the challenges the cross-strait friction with mainland China has created for international security. Our colleague Bonnie Glazer has written a new report on Taiwan's exclusion from international organizations, and she discussed it this week with Congressman Matt Salmon, who leads the House Foreign Affairs Committee's Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific.
And the focus of our report really is on Taiwan's security and the need to integrate Taiwan into security mechanisms. But of course, economics and security are just inextricably linked.
Very much so.
And one of the issues that I know is on the minds of President Ma and interestingly, really is an area of consensus between the opposition, the DPP, and the Kuomintang, is the desire to become more integrated economically into the region and globally, and particularly to join, if possible, if the TPP becomes a reality, which I think we would share the view that we hope that it will be. So what do you think are the prospects, assuming that we have a TPP agreement later this year, for Taiwan to join?
Well, I think it's just common sense. China might want to pretend otherwise, but Taiwan is the biggest investor in China's economy. And I think that it just makes sense to have all hands on deck. Taiwan is a big importer of U.S. products and services, and it's a big exporter to the United States. And it just makes sense. And so while I'm a big advocate of TPP, I think that ultimately, whether it's TPP or other economic opportunities, to leave Taiwan out is just flat out dumb.
I would agree. If you look out maybe 10 years, where do you expect to see Taiwan in relationship to the mainland and the United States? Do you think that we will still see the status quo, or do you think we will see radical change?
I would have really hoped that with China's entry into the WTO and the passage of PNTR. In fact, I said this back then. I hoped I was a prophet. I really guess I wasn't. But I had said at the time that I believed that since China had kind of opened the genie's bottle by letting out the economy and economic freedom of sorts, that political reform wasn't far behind. It's just a natural segue. And the political reform in China has been slow to non-existent, and I'm really disappointed. I think it will ultimately be to their detriment. As long as they continue to try to play a heavy hand with Hong Kong, which I had hoped would be different. I was there for the Hong Kong handover ceremony, met with some of the dissidents like Martin Lee, and really hoped that China would practice a more hands-off approach to Hong Kong than they have. Hoped and prayed that some of the human rights issues in China would have been better than they would now. Right now, there is a detente of sorts between Taiwan and China, but I give almost all the credit to President Ma, almost all of it. I don't think China has really done much of anything to improve those relations. It's Taiwan that's made almost all the efforts improving that relationship. And I think that China has been pushing the envelope time and time again with its aggression, with the Spratlys and other issues in the South China Sea and East China Sea. And I truly do believe that if they don't listen to some of these calls for reasonable dialogue like President Ma has issued, the world is going to start turning against them. And they need to realize that their economy, I know they don't care as much about political reform as they do about their economic prospects, but if they continue to put the lid on any kind of political reform and working with Taiwan, I think the world of public opinion is going to move against them. And I think it's in their best economic interest to sit down at the table and try to iron out some of these issues and be reasonable about allowing Taiwan to participate in the world process. It's actually kind of childish, I think.
Well, of course, we have seen some progress in terms of Taiwan expanding its participation in the international community under President
Ma.
Not
enough.
But not enough.
No.
Absolutely not enough.
Not even close to enough.
Not even close, yes.
Right.
And the risks are growing. And we will talk about that more a little bit later.
That was Bonnie Glazer. Now we turn to our one to watch. China dropped a number of the most high-profile U.S. technology companies from its state-purchased approved list during 2014, including Cisco Systems, Apple, Intel-owned companies McAfee and Citrix Systems. Meanwhile, hundreds of local Chinese tech and software companies have been added to these government procurement lists. The decision can be viewed in many ways, but Beijing's concern over widespread U.S. cyber surveillance programs appear to have played a key role. Critics have argued that the moves are in keeping with long-standing Chinese efforts to promote indigenous innovation and tech development while protecting Chinese companies from international competition. According to China's government, there are over 649 million Chinese netizens by the end of 2014, so the struggle for Chinese public tech market share will no doubt continue. That's our show for this week. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or via our RSS feed and visit cogitated.com to learn more. I'm Colm Quinn. Thanks for listening.